Welcome to this episode of Wall Street to Main Street. I'm your host, Emily Bonney, here with my co-host, finance expert and author of the successful finance book, The Wall Street MBA, and my husband, who I'm seeing quite a lot of lately, more than I really ever thought I would, Ruben Advani. Hey, Ruben.
Hi, Emily.
And please forgive us if you hear extra commotion in the background. Like many of you, we are working from home with three kids off of school as we try to do our part in flattening the curve. On today's episode, we are going to discuss just that. What may be the only thing on people's minds, both on Main Street and Wall Street. Along with all the health implications of the COVID-19 pandemic, we cannot help but worry about the economic repercussions of this global health crisis. We are joined today by our guest, Chuck Bush. Chuck is CEO of the Investment Banking Institute, a global leader in financial training, offering in-person boot camps and online courses, both live and self-study, in topics like financial modeling and valuation. More about IBI can be found at ibanking.com. Chuck is also a registered broker-dealer and managing director of Great Road Capital, a boutique investment bank. Chuck, welcome to the show.
Thank you. Happy to be on.
First, hope you and your family are doing well during this unprecedented time. That goes without saying, but we're glad that you've taken some time to be with us today.
Thanks. Well, it's definitely a tough time juggling, but we're managing to work through it with lots of screen time.
Same here. And before we get started, I do want to extend a sincere thank you to all of our medical professionals, grocery store workers, postal and delivery workers, restaurant workers, farmers, and anyone else who can't stay home, those who aren't staying home in order to help us all get through this uncertain time. All those that are truly on the front lines, we will be forever indebted to your service and sacrifice. Also, a quick disclaimer that the views, thoughts, and opinions expressed in this podcast belong solely to our hosts and guests and not necessarily to our employers, organizations, committees, or other groups or individuals. The content is for informational purposes only. You should not construe any such information or other material as legal, tax, investment, financial, or other advice. So let's get into it. I want to start with the stimulus package. According to many sources, including the New York Times, the Washington Post, and CNN, the Senate approved a historic $2 trillion stimulus package to provide a jolt to the economy. It is one of the most expensive and far-reaching measures Congress has ever considered and represents the largest emergency aid package in U.S. history. It received overwhelming bipartisan support. The vote was unanimous at 96-0. Just a few key elements of the proposal, $250 billion set aside for direct payments to individuals and families, $350 billion in small business loans, $250 billion in unemployment insurance benefits, and $500 billion in loans for distressed companies. So, Ruben, I'm going to start with you, and then I'd like to get Chuck to weigh in.
Terrific. Well, I think in general, this was a good first step. It remains to be seen how the stimulus plays out in terms of economic growth, but at the very least, it sends a strong message to participants in our economy, which is the government is taking action and they're taking it swiftly. They're doing what they can to support individuals and businesses in need. And I think there's a great deal of value in that. Now, how that plays out in terms of relief for businesses and relief for individuals, very, very difficult to predict because, as you said, this is unprecedented. This is nothing like other crises that we've seen in modern history. So it will be certainly a use case in terms of how governments can respond to bolster an economy in times of unprecedented panic.
And Chuck, what are some of your thoughts on the stimulus package?
I just want to make sure that I say that as a registered broker dealer, again, all of my opinions are and statements are my own opinions and should not be construed as financial advice. Well, I think one of the things that is really interesting is that it appears that the government has learned some lessons from the Great Recession and the stimulus package that came out of that by acting quickly and decisively. So I think that's really good and really important. And there, when I look at this, I see the $2 billion roughly, it's 2.2, split into two categories. One is direct relief and one is in loans. And as Emily, you quoted some of the numbers, I think that one of the most important aspects of this relief is that it helps families and workers. So, of the $900 billion or so that was direct relief, $300 billion went to household payments, $250 billion to unemployment insurance. States got $150 billion, and there were tax deferrals and postponements of $200 billion. So I think that's a lot of really important stimulus to households and employees. That's very important, and I think that's a big difference, I think, from perhaps past stimulus packages, and really unprecedented.
Yeah, I think that's a terrific point, Chuck. My big question mark surrounding this is, what will families and businesses do with the money? And I think that's really anyone's guess at this point. So we're in uncharted waters, but the big question is, will stimulus truly be stimulus? Or will these funds either be saved or used to pay past bills that may not necessarily provide the kind of economic support that we need right now? In essence, what we need on Main Street is for people to get out there and shop. And the big question is, are people going to actually do that with the funds that come in as it pertains to corporations? We need them to keep their workers employed. We need them to continue to develop new products and services. So I really am at a loss in terms of how this all plays out, but I'll be curious to see what happens.
Yeah, I will too. And I think that's a really good point. The other $900 billion of loans, of that, $350 billion went to small businesses, and then there was $450 billion for distressed businesses. So my take on that is that when you help small businesses, which there are so many small businesses, I forget what the numbers are, that are either sole proprietorships or very small companies, that's going to drive that. That's actually going to create some of the stimulus you're talking about, because with individuals running businesses or small businesses, I think you'll see some benefit from that. And then I think your point is well taken with direct relief. My bet is that people are still going to be reticent to go out and spend more, and they'll probably be paying down bills. But I think if you pay down a credit card bill, that opens the door up for potential new spending later. And of course, the big question is how quickly, as you said, Ruben.
And is there a value, do you believe, in sort of a, no matter how the money is being spent, a value in relieving some of the anxiety people are having on Main Street and Wall Street, that even passing a bill and saying this is coming, no matter how people choose to spend or not spend the money, that taking some of the uncertainty away or anxiety away, that we feel like something's being done, is actually a boost to the economy in and of itself?
I think it can be. I think we're seeing that play out in real time. We've seen the stock market bounce from its lows. And I think that is indeed validation that confidence to some degree is improving. Now, the real question is, will that create a sustainable wealth effect? In other words, with the stock market moving off of its lows, do people suddenly feel more emboldened in terms of their spending? Does it mean that people feel that, well, my 401k is worth more now than it was a few days ago? I can go out and buy something that I've been holding off on. That's really a big question that remains to be answered at this point.
Yeah, I agree with Ruben on that. I think that we won't know for some period of time whether or not the you know, this general relief is going to kind of ripple through the economy. My personal take is that it, you know, again, my own speculation is that it probably will, but hard to see where exactly that'll play out.
Speaking of the economy and relief and growth, are there certain sectors that we see recovering faster than others? What are some of the sectors that we may look out for that will see the biggest boost quickly? Some of them were hit hard quickly, travel, entertainment. What do we see being the swiftest in recovery, Ruben?
I would say that technology is probably best poised for recovery. I think one technology was not as severely hit as, say, travel was. And I think technology is proving itself essential in these times of need. We all, for the most part, are working from home, conducting our business from home, and we've seen a number of companies experience tremendous user growth in the midst of this crisis. Technology is not going away. We'll be using it in more focused ways, both in the near term and presumably in the long term as a result of this crisis. So I think technology, even though many major technology companies took a hit in terms of their market capitalization in the last month or so, I think we'll see them bounce back sooner rather than later.
Yeah, I agree with that. I think technology is one of the big sectors where we'll see the comeback reflected. If you look at a company like Apple, which has $240 billion on its balance sheet, that's enough for the company to run for a year or more without selling one more product. So they're well capitalized. On the other hand, there are retailers that have, you know, in this strong consumer economy, have done a lot of stock repurchases and dividends. And I was reading about one that has only $240 million in cash, which allows them to run for about 4 days. So that's I think, you know, an interesting contrast. I think tech companies, you know, will definitely lead, and retailers perhaps not so much. Another area that I think is interesting is that there's been quite a surge in purchases of stock by corporate insiders. I was reading, I believe, in the Wall Street Journal that 2,800 executives have purchased $1.2 billion in stock since March 1st. So that is unprecedented. And, you know, some of those areas are in financial services, energy and natural resources, and even a fitness company. So I think that's an interesting area. You know, I think the oil and gas energy sector has been hit so hard that the stocks are pretty cheap, and that's what's driving that. And then when you have corporate insiders buying, then that's typically a sign that they have some faith in the company's near, you know, I'd say short, medium, and long-term prospects. So I think maybe energy and materials will also see an uptick early on.
Well, I have to say, I tip my hat to those energy executives who are bold enough to do something like that, because the reality is the energy sector has been hit from two angles, both on the supply side as well as on the demand side. The demand side is obviously a product of the global pandemic. People are basically consuming less energy. They're driving less. So they're using less gasoline and other petroleum products. But even on the supply side, what's happening between Russia and Saudi Arabia is flooding the market with cheap oil. And that's making it very difficult for many of our domestic energy producers, both on the production side as well as on the service side, to function effectively and profitably. So, hey, my heart goes out to these executives who are willing to take that bold step in an effort to bolster confidence in their companies.
Yeah, I'm a big fan of companies and execs who take bold steps rather than incremental ones. So I agree.
There you go.
Well, and are these corporate insiders, like you said, Chuck, signaling that though there may be a temporary hard hit right now, that these things aren't going away, like energy, financial services, that at some point these things are going to come back because this is part of our life and our culture.
I think that's right. I think that's right. I think it's a combination of those, you know, people still need banks. They still need bank accounts. They're going to need credit even more. And so I think we'll see some, you know, some turnaround there. And then with oil and gas, energy, I think it's a combination of anticipation of people using it more as they, you know, perhaps restrictions are reduced or people start needing to move around more. And I think it's also just a factor of just the steep drop in energy and oil stocks has made, you know, some CEOs, some insiders more bullish because they don't necessarily think that the just staggering drop is warranted. And so that they just see kind of a buying opportunity as well as an opportunity to show faith in the company.
Yeah, I think sector wise, most of these sectors, if not all of them, will survive and will resume their growth trajectory at some point. But I think it's important to note that individual players within these distressed sectors may not survive. To some degree within a sector, it will be a zero-sum game. And the ones that are sufficiently well capitalized will be the ones that can successfully weather the storm. The ones that, you know, Chuck, you mentioned the retailer that has basically 4 days worth of working capital. Well, that's the kind of company that may not make it out of this crisis, and that market share will be picked up by someone else. So I think sectors will survive, but individual players within these sectors, sadly, if they're not capitalized well, will not make it.
And that was going to be my next question. If we're talking about the sectors that may recover most quickly, are there sectors you want to keep an eye on, or people should keep an eye on that may take the longest to recover after this hit? Chuck, I'll start with you.
Yeah, it's interesting. I was thinking about, as you were asking the question, what retailers, for example, might come back faster? And I was thinking about grocery retailers, right? I mean, that's the one area that people are spending more on, the big box, you know, stores like, you know, the warehouse stores. So in contrast, I think you'll continue to see a downturn in any retailers that are less essential. And you'll probably see a lot of failures in among those companies that are not essential retailers, you know, within that retail sector. So I think there'll be continued pain on that side for retailers. You know, if you look at giant retailers like Walmart and Amazon, again, well capitalized, a lot of cash on the balance sheet, and this is probably not going to have as great an effect on them. And, you know, again, with people not going out, they're ordering more of their goods via those online retailers. So I think there's the ones that are able to deliver fast and have a lot of store footprint are going to be able to recover faster. I think if you're looking at other sectors, say within technology, I think particularly with software, there's, you know, we will probably see an uptick because there's so much or a recovery there, because I think there's so many, you know, types of software that people are using more and more as they're staying in more and more. And I think with a lot of these, there's, you know, it's a subscription model. So once you have that subscription, it's sort of on auto pay. And you get used to using it over several months, and I think you'll see those types of purchases continue.
Yeah, I think with regard to software, you also don't have the same supply chain challenges that a hardware technology hardware manufacturer would face. I would add also, I think you're going to see the cruise line industry really struggle to regain its footing. I just think from my personal standpoint, you'd have to pay me a lot of money to get on a cruise ship right now. And I think that's something they're going to face in general for quite some time. Now, that being said, I know the folks who run these major cruise lines are very smart. They've been very successful over the last couple of decades. I'm willing to bet they're probably thinking about solutions to manage that specific fear. How can they ensure that every passenger getting on that ship is cleared of any health ailments and will be safe on that ship and also can be screened when they're coming off of that ship. If they can provide that solution, I think you're going to see a tremendous bounce back from that industry.
That's really interesting. I couldn't agree with you more about the idea of getting on a cruise ship. And I was feeling that a few years ago when you had the spread of various stomach flus on cruise ships and thinking, boy, that sounds really awful. You're caught on it. And then with that first cruise ship early on in the pandemic that was, stuck on the shores of Japan, just hearing the horror stories from that were significant. I think that you're right, Ruben. If the cruise companies can figure out how to make sure people get on healthy and get off healthy, I think that's going to be a help. I think one of the issues is just the technology on these cruise ships. One of the reasons the coronavirus spread so quickly on that Japanese cruise ship, or the cruise ship that was off the coast of Japan, I can't remember the name of it, was that, you have everyone staying in their rooms. There's not a lot of air circulation and people are all breathing the same air. So the virus is just spreading by going through the ventilation systems of these ships. So that's that, if there's a technology opportunity to clean up the air and to filter the air appropriately on those ships, then I think then there's a chance. But absent that, I do see some real pain and decline in that industry.
Well, Chuck, I think you just came up with your next big business idea.
free to the public.
And keeping sort of on this topic of leisure, one of the other areas of really the economy and our culture that has been hit hard are sports and entertainment. The NBA shut down the remainder of its season. The NFL recently ordered the shutdown of all their facilities for the next 2 weeks. The 2020 Olympics has been postponed. The PGA Tour announced cancellation of events for the next 4 weeks. There are dozens of TV shows and movies that have delayed filming. Variety list shows like Grey's Anatomy, The Walking Dead, The Bachelorette, and films like the Avatar sequels and Matrix 4, amongst others, that have all halted. So it may seem like, well, these aren't necessities, but really this is a big part of our economy. Ruben?
I'm feeling the pain personally around the lack of entertainment options. I think I've now seen Frozen 2 about 15 times. And while I'm a big Disney fan, there's only so many times I can listen to those songs, as much as I love them. That being said, I think we're recognizing the need for these types of distractions. They are woven into the fabric of our culture, and we miss our sports, we miss our movies, we miss our TV shows. And I'd like to see something change in the coming weeks. I've heard some points of positivity around this. There were some articles circulating earlier today that perhaps the NBA will manage to conclude its season without the fans, and they'll impose very strict protocol around screening for viruses and other health measures. Now, if that's true, if that happens, I think that would be great. Nothing would make me happier right now than to watch an NBA game on TV. And I'm not even the biggest basketball fan, but just to have something to cheer for. So if we can see some level of return to normal life, even through entertainment, I think that's a well-needed distraction for the American public right now.
And Chuck, you may have, a particularly interesting perspective, being that you're sort of in the heart of it in LA.
I've advised companies in media and entertainment for a long time, and so I follow these things very closely. I think on the one hand, when you look at the fact that movie theaters have closed, that is a sign of that's going to create greater, I think, pain, to use that word again, for theatrical distribution. We were already seeing kind of flat or declining box office over the last several years, and really more and more dollars going to the large studio, what we call tentpole films. And so now that theaters are closed, all these companies, entertainment companies, have a reduction in one of their largest sources of revenue. On the other hand, one of the things we've obviously all experienced is the rise of all these streaming platforms. And so there's been a lot of consumption of those. I know in my household, we've been streaming something every day. And so, you know, that may sort of pick up the slack. I think that one of the things that sort of, if you go deeper into the entertainment economy, the production of content for these streaming platforms has been just unprecedented. I mean, multiple companies, all the streamers are spending at least $5-10 billion, you know, sometimes up to $20 billion if you're looking at Netflix, per year on content. And that has been a boon to the economy here in Los Angeles. With social distancing requirements, now you have movie sets being completely shut down, television show sets being completely shut down, no content being produced. So I think that the outlook is you know remains murky for the entertainment business, and I think there's going to be a lot of you know additional pain before things get better. As far as sports, go ahead.
Yeah, this is.
I was going to say just my thoughts on sports. I had this thought about one valuations. You know, Ruben wrote a piece on a blog on our blog for the Investment Banking Institute a while back about valuing sports teams, and it'll be interesting to see if that you know how that changes with NHL, NBA, and you know Major League Baseball being delayed or canceled. I also had kind of a thought that's less economic. I wonder if this long furlough of players will change sports statistics in you know later in the season or in future seasons if things go back to normal. If all these athletes are social distancing and staying at home, sure they have very nice gyms, but I wonder if that'll change the statistics at all.
That's a fascinating point. Go ahead, Ruben.
Yeah, no, all interesting things to see what kind of achievements these athletes are able to produce, you know, months from now. I mean, if I'm any indication, I'm not an athlete, but I can tell you I can barely walk a flight of steps right now spending 2 weeks at home. So I hope these athletes are doing more than I am right now. To your point, you referenced that article I wrote sometime last year and posted on the Investment Banking Institute blog site. You know, it's interesting. I've been thinking about this lately because in that article, I talked about basically the key assumptions in valuing a sports team. And contrary to popular belief, the value is derived from so much more than attendance. Sports teams are valued off of not only their attendance, but also their licensing fees around their name and their products, the purchase of those products themselves, and the venue fees. Many of these sports teams have either joint ventures or actual ownership in their stadiums. And the ability to rent out space for concerts and trade shows and things like that provide a valuable source of revenue for these teams. So with all of that essentially dissolving in a matter of weeks, I can imagine the devastating effect it's having on valuations in the sports sector.
Well, and then it loops back into media with, you know, without NBA games being televised, you're seeing a hit in advertising.
Absolutely. And, you know, that ties into licensing in general, just for the content itself. So it's creating a very dangerous feedback loop as far as valuation goes. So hopefully we can see a bounce sooner than later. And the NBA may be the ones leading that charge if they're able to get some games off the ground.
I think one interesting factor related to valuation in general, this is a really interesting time because we've seen so much growth in M&A in the last few years, mergers and acquisitions, and companies have amassed large amounts of capital to execute various roll-up strategies. And you've also seen, obviously, we had a huge appreciation in valuations in public markets, which was also reflected in private markets. Now, with this, you know, economic downturn, you have a lot of companies that's and investors that still have cash sitting on the sidelines. They have a lot of dry powder, as we say. And, you know, I think we're seeing some, and then during that time of appreciation, people were really not finding deals that were, they were finding companies were finding that the valuations were going sky high and getting concerned about those sky high valuations. With valuations now declining, it'll be interesting to see what happens as, you know, kind of valuation rationalizes a bit, and maybe that creates buying opportunities. And certainly there will be significant growth in the purchase of distressed companies. And I think a lot of investors with dry powder have been waiting for those types of opportunities to scoop up companies in distress or cheaper valuations.
Well, one thing that past financial crises have taught us is that in the finance world, even a crisis brings out financial opportunities. Somebody will be making money off of this this global tragedy and this global economic catastrophe. Some way, somehow, there will be opportunities for people who have the cash and are willing to deploy it.
And hopefully also on a sort of more light note, the opportunity for innovation and looking at products and companies differently. And like Chuck said, looking at values differently and really maybe getting a handle on what the proper value of a corporation, a company, a sector really is.
Absolutely. And we saw innovations come out of the 2008-2009 crises, things that made our lives better from a technological standpoint, made things more efficient, things that improved the financial services sector, things that even from the legislative standpoint provided safeguards for consumers and businesses. So I'm also hopeful that some very good things will come out of this. We just need to get through it. And more than anything, we need to protect human lives and make sure that that our healthcare workers and the individuals suffering from this virus are taken care of and recover soon.
And sort of looking ahead here, you know, that's definitely something we're going to be looking out for. We're all hopeful that we're going to get, you know, through this the best we can. We're going to be looking out for what this means for various sectors in the economy, what this means for the stock market. The stimulus package is going to the House for a vote. That plan is to do a voice vote to avoid calling all the members back to Washington. So let's look out to see what, you know, happens there. And I'm going to end it here with each of you, Ruben and Chuck, your opinion on what to really keep an eye on. Chuck, I'll start.
Well, I think it'll be interesting to see how the unemployment numbers continue to shake out. We saw unemployment claims of 3 million new claims in the past month. That is, you know, really remarkable, unprecedented, three times the previous record. So we'll want to keep an eye out for that. And I think there's also been wage growth, and over during this latest boom. And so I think, you know, we'll look at that as well as a sign of, you know, how much disposable income workers may have, and that those two things could enable us to better predict or anticipate how quickly we'll come out of this dip, and whether or not we'll see a sustained decline in the economy.
Ruben.
I'm most interested in seeing the GDP numbers. In addition to what Chuck said, I think those are valuable numbers. I'm really keen on seeing the quarterly GDP numbers and how bad the dip is. And, you know, in conjunction with other economic data, will this be a prolonged recession or will it turn into something worse? So my eyes are on GDP right now.
Well, again, Chuck and Ruben, thank you for all your expert insights today on Wall Street to Main Street. Chuck, our guest, is the CEO of the Investment Banking Institute and also the Managing Director of Great Road Capital, a boutique investment bank, and a registered broker-dealer. Chuck, thank you so much for joining us today.
Thank you for having me.
Your insights. And Ruben, thank you as always for joining me as the co-host of Wall Street to Main Street. Again, I'm Emily Advani, and we look forward to next time where we cover more about business news, the economy, and the stock market.
Thank you. Thanks, Ruben.
Thank you, Chuck.